Jan Fischer was born in Prague in 1921, and he was interviewed at the age of 82 by Silvia Singerova in 2003. An engaging storyteller, you can find a link to his entire interview in the show notes. Jan Fischer is best known as a theater director. Indeed, he learned to direct plays while imprisoned in Terezin. He is also known for his book of memoirs, which he could only write after Hanna, his wife of more than 50 years, passed away in 1997. His story is read for us by Peter Morton in London.
My dad, Richard Fischer, was born in 1885 in Prague. His mother tongue was German, and his hobby, his passion, was photography, and he sold cameras, lenses, binoculars, and microscopes. My mum, Julie Lederer, was born in Prague in 1884, and they married in 1914. My brother Herbert was born in Prague in 1915. I was born in 1921. The first Czechoslovak Republic, which was created after 1918, is hard to explain to people these days because back then we felt a combination of Czech, Jewish and German identities. That's because nationality didn't count then, at least not at first. Most of our acquaintances were Jews. Some had already converted out. I suppose most of them were looking for a painless path to assimilation. As for our family, we had also converted. We didn't go to a synagogue, and we didn't go to a church, either. During the 1920s, my father's business did well. And then the economic crisis hit in 1929. We moved to smaller and smaller flats. You could feel the tension rising, at home and on the streets, as the depression became worse. Then came 1938, when the French and the British sold out Czechoslovakia to the Germans, and a chunk of our country was just given to the Germans. And from that moment on, everything changed. I was 17 years old. The date was the 30th of September, and our world collapsed. No one would buy anything German. And facing total ruin, my father killed himself. Until then, the word Jew simply hadn't meant a thing. It was something like being a minority, something we just took as a fact. But there had been no negative connotation, at least not that I could personally recall. 15th of March, 1939, how well I remember it. The day the Germans marched into Prague and dismembered our country. I stood there in the snow, watching the first motorized divisions of the German army arriving. The soldiers sitting in those open vehicles, they looked like statues. Crowds were pushing people and they were shouting, whistling and spitting at them. Soon they stamped a letter J in my ID card. And when ration cards were introduced, we received less food. I was forced to wear a yellow star with the inscription Jude. And overnight everyone pretended not to see you. I started to get the feeling that something had to happen. This was not life. In December 1941, I received my summons. And 1,000 other young Jewish men showed up at the Prague fairgrounds. We were being sent to Terezin. Suddenly the normal world disappeared beyond the horizon. The lives we had been leading until then instantly came to an end. A new horrifying reality showed its face, and this would be my world for the next 5 years. We were in the hands of madmen and murderers, and from then on no one could be sure of his life. Amen. It is very difficult to describe life in the Terezin ghetto. This had been a barracks town and fortress built by the Austrians in the 1780s and known as Terezinstadt. Then it was a Czech garrison town with soldiers and their families in it. But after the German occupation, the Czech army vanished, a Families that lived there were forced to move out, and the town began to fill with poor Jewish wretches who had been thrown out of their homes and forced to live in inhumane conditions. Everywhere, three-tier bunks, even in the attics, hardly any food, the most appalling hygiene, medical care with great doctors, but without medicine or instruments. Women and men lived in separate barracks, children in what they called homes, but those so-called homes were simply overcrowded rooms. And all of us were locked away from the world behind ramparts and walls. Mortality in the ghetto was colossal, and there was soon no room for burial. As they were afraid of epidemics, the Germans decided to build a large crematorium quickly, and that was one of my jobs. The dead were carted in on rough boards, then incinerated. We became experts in cremating bodies. As for what went on in the ghetto, the Germans had no interest in what was going on. Let them sing and dance, play football or do theatre. What difference does it make? They won't escape their fate. And I found myself in Terezin. You see, ever since my parents began bringing me to the theatre, I had this passion for the stage. And there in Terezin, on the opposite bunk to me, there was a great guy, Zdeněk Jelinek. He was a poet and translator who also wrote his own plays. He was always in a good mood, and I owe so much of my knowledge of the theatre to him, and those nights we stayed awake talking. Zdeněk did not have long to live before the Germans murdered him at the age of 25, but in the time we had, he and I started to put on plays. We needed props, we needed lights, we had to have a stage. And one day we found a stage in the attic of an abandoned building. For lighting, we had a powerful light bulb on a wire. We made sets, we painted our bodies, we created costumes. I will never forget the electrically charged atmosphere. In that dark hole of hell, we suddenly had poetry and a world of fantasy that filled us with joy. And this became our reality. We weren't good actors, but most of us were just amateurs, but that wasn't the point. Theatre meant that the people in the audience and the actors on the stage were as one, that we were together. People sang, acted, recited and danced in Terezin. Never again will you find so much culture in one spot, so much intensity. In the midst of all this, a rather famous actress appeared in Terezin. Hannah was older than me and was married, and I was madly in love with her. Totally and hopelessly. She sometimes came to our rehearsals, gave advice, and I ran after her like a dog. We had an affair. I thought it was secret. One day I was asked to play chess with a man, turned out to be Hannah's husband, and it was as if we were playing for her. He lost the game, and just a few days later, he was called up for a transport to Auschwitz. To my horror, Hannah volunteered to go with him. So we all lost that game. Then my mother was called up, and my brother. I would never see either of them again. And on the 28th of September, over 1,000 young men were called up. I was one of them. When we got out of the train in Auschwitz-Birkenau, I saw the chimneys belching smoke. I thought for sure they were for steel, and we were there to work. As it turns out, I was sent to work in a sub-camp in the town of Gleiwitz. Then there was a death march, and one day in late January, the Germans guarding us weren't there. It was suddenly quiet, as if time didn't exist. It was actually the sound of the dead, as there were lots of bodies outside. That day, a Soviet soldier appeared on a motorbike. He saw this surreal picture of hell, of what we looked like, and he burst into tears. Imagine, a Soviet soldier had seen everything, and he was crying as he looked at us. "I'll send you help," he shouted. "They'll come for sure, soon." And he roared off. For me, that was the end of the terrible war. At last came that day in May 1945. I could go home. I had gotten to Prague by then. I was standing in Wenceslas Square. I had nothing and nobody. I was 23 years old and had not actually lived. Well, I still loved theatre. I started to meet with friends in a small actors' group, and that's where I ran into Hanna Maislova. The year was 1947. She and I had known each other in Terezin. I kept on at her about going out for a drink. In the end, I managed to persuade her. We went to a wine bar, and then to her apartment, and then we spent the next 50 years together. Hanna was Jewish and was born in Prague in 1921. She had been deported too. She lost everything. And in her presence, no one was allowed to talk about what we had gone through. Soon we had two children, a girl and a boy. Then there was politics. I hated fascists from the bottom of my heart. I identified them with all that was German. Even though it had been my first language, not a single German word came out of my mouth since 1939. But in time I realized there's no such thing as collective guilt. Still, I once met a German who I considered to be a decent man. He used to be a Wehrmacht officer, and he told me he only found out what was going on in the winter of 1945. I guess some of them really didn't know. But what is it, this so-called not knowing? Just not wanting to know? In 1952, it was time for the Jews once again. The Slansky trial. Hard to believe, but things were going badly. The party needed someone to blame, so there were arrests, torture, trials, and then executions. 14 innocent men were tried. 11 were hung. 10 of those were Jews. That was the sickness of communists, always to look for an enemy. In the 1960s, they succeeded in my case. It came in August 1968 when the Soviets sent the tanks into our country. Imagine, Russian tanks on the streets reminded me inevitably of German tanks in March 1939. It was my second occupation. Like nearly everybody else, I had been a supporter of the reforms of the Dubček government, and I didn't try to hide it. I was dismissed from my post as artistic director and expelled from the party in 1971. I was fired from all my jobs. So I got to do all kinds of work. Water pumper, warehouse man, that kind of thing. But that is not important now. Occasionally I was allowed to direct, like for a puppet show at Christmas. And after years of penury, I finally reached retirement, which was a considerable relief for me. My dear wife Hannah died in the summer of 1997, and after that I took a pen and started to write a book of all I had been through. My children knew a little, but not much. They're my children, after all. I didn't want to upset them by sitting them down and telling them about it. But I could do it in a book, and I did. I remember back during the revolution of 1989 here in Prague, during all those exciting changes. And I was sitting in the theatre involved in one of those ardent debates. There was speech-making, chanting, and thunderous applause. It was great. You see, it was as if the vent had opened and clean, sharp air was starting to circulate in our country. At the time, my nephew came over one afternoon and he asked me, "So, Uncle, how many upheavals have you actually gone through?" He wanted to know. I was taken aback, and at first I laughed. But then I started counting. Well, we start with 1938, the Munich Pact, and then the Allies betrayed our country. And then 1939, the German occupation, when I was thrown out of society. And then 2 years later came 1941, when I was locked away for 5 years. And then came 1945, liberation. Of course, there was 1948, the takeover by the Communist Party of our country. And wait, there was 1968, the Soviet occupation, and how that led once again to me being fired from everything, and now 1989, when our country has rejoined Europe, which makes this, well, number 7. That's quite enough for 8 decades, I would say. Quite enough.